all of our coaches, it's important for me to get input from everyone. Our position coaches, special teams coaches, we're all in this together. So it's not just a, you know, ultimately the decision will come down between myself and Nick. You know, again, it won't be a rash decision because we've been thinking about this for a while, and it all works itself out in the end. And I know we'll have, wherever those 53 guys are, we're going to have 53 tough guys who are mentally and physically tough and ready to hit the season run.
I feel like, Seth, if you either have a really good team or a really bad team, those are the ones that where there's very little controversy over who's making the squad. You know, the bad team, it's like, all right, it's, you know, one of those things like, all right, well, these, you know, it's hard to even find 53 guys to put on the roster. When you have a really, really good team, and I think the Texans have the potential, especially the offensive line that we've seen in the preseason is the one that we're getting in the regular season, acknowledging that there's room for improvement still, obviously, over what they're putting out there. I think they've got a chance to be a really good team. As a result, as we're doing sort of like this roster puzzle here, you know, I think some of like the average Texans teams through the years, it felt like, okay, there's like 10 or 15 spots. I don't know what they're going to do here. There's maybe five spots on the team right now that are up for grabs, I think. At most, five or six, you know, if we're looking at the back end of the roster here.
The running back room, it gets really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think the offensive line gets interesting. I think the Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs, I don't think either of those guys will get cut. If one of them did, I think it would probably be Juice Scruggs. But I think both those guys are kind of in a boat of they're still relatively young and they want to give them a go in this system to see how they do.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of guys so far in training camp look like the better version of themselves when operating in this Nick Caley offense. And the running backs though are the one that's probably giving me the most fits because it also includes guys that are fullback, you know, British Brooks, running back slash fullback slash tight end. Yakob Johnson is a fullback slash tight end. So you got that third tight end position too. That do you keep Irv Smith? Do you keep the rookie draft pick? Do you keep the guy you traded for? Those are very hazy for me right now.
Yeah. I think offensive line was one of the easier ones for me, just because I do think Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson and Blake Fisher are all making the team. Yeah. I think they've got their nine there. There's like 14 or 15 guys, I think, that are battling it out for like six spots. And it's not even like Irv Smith is battling Harrison Bryant for the third tight end spot as much as Irv Smith, and I'm just using him as an example, is battling Tommy Togiai or Jamal Hill or guys like that for the 52nd and 53rd spot. Like, oftentimes these decisions come down to not who is the best of these tight ends, let's say. It's do we want to go with four tight ends or do we want to go with six linebackers?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it boils down to. Like the names that I have here, the wide receiver room, do you think they end up keeping seven wide receivers like they did last year where they kept six wide receivers and Steven Sims, who was listed as one but was really the return guy for the team?
I know. I think it, partly with what I've seen out of Nick Caley, it's that they're focusing a lot on the core of the offense, using a fullback, using multiple tight ends. And because of the Joe Mixon injury and the uncertainty about that, I think you end up keeping a normal number of wide receivers. Yeah. And you end up having just maybe one extra running back slash fullback slash tight end.
Do you think Tommy Togiai makes this team?
I think he does. And the thing about Tommy Togiai that's interesting is that it's a classic thing that Pete Carroll would do in his defenses or does in his defenses, which is you've got a very aggressive mindset up front. Your defensive linemen are just firing off the ball, but sometimes that can hurt you. So what you have is you have one guy that's a little bit more of a plugger that can line up head up on the backside guard and almost play like a linebacker behind the really aggressive penetrating defensive lineman. And I think Tommy Togiai fits that bill. I think that he's just so strong. He uses his hands really well. He's not all that, you know, athletic by defensive tackle standards, but he just flat out gets the job done. And a lot of the stuff he does really well, it's kind of stuff that you would see more in a gap control defense but there's a place for that on this team. So I think they it's just hard. He just consistently produces, and he imposes his will physically. That part of it, I think D'Amico's got to love. That, all right, he doesn't get upfield real fast, but he just bullies dudes,
yeah,
and he tosses them around. So I think he makes the team.
They like him a lot. What do you think happens with D'Amico Autry? Is keeping Tommy Togiai impacts D'Amico Autry's situation? For those who don't know, D'Amico Autry has been on the PUP list for the entirety of training camp so far.
Yeah.
And hasn't gotten on the field all that much since he became a Houston Texan over a year ago.
I don't think it affects – you can keep five defensive tackles pretty easily, so I think it's more of a Kurt Heinisch
– Well, let's list them. Hang on, let's list them. Because you got Mario Edwards, Tim Settle, Foley Fatakasi, Sheldon Rankins, Tommy Togiai. That's five.
Right. That's five.
Yep. So I'm saying, how does it impact so D'Amico Autry?
D'Amico Autry, I look at as an end.
Oh, okay. So you have
so it's Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
Yep.
Then you got Darrell Taylor, D'Amico Autry, and Derek Barnett.
Derek Barnett. So
Dylan Horton is an odd man out. I think Solomon Bird is a tough one too, but I think he probably doesn't make it unless they might decide. All right, we gotta keep some of this youth around. We might lose Dylan Horton and Solomon Bird if we cut them. So maybe it's between Derek Barnett and D'Amico Autry and Darrell Taylor. They make a decision between one of those three guys.
Well, and I guess I guess my point with D'Amico was less about tackle and end, and that they can still keep him on the PUP list and kind of kick the decision down the road for, you know, kick the can down the road for four games.
Yeah,
that's what'll be interesting to me, because they're among the bottom five in cap space right now. Cutting D'Amico Autry does give you some dry powder for salary cap purposes. You save several million there. So I think that'll be an interesting one to see.
For anybody that hears that, that's not like a drastically bad. The Texans are fine in terms of cap space in future years. It's just right now they're operating a little bit. You like to have a little bit more cushion in case somebody gets injured or a trade comes open.
Trade deadline. Yeah, absolutely. You want that dry powder. Do you think Jamal Hill ends up making this team?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think Hanson. I think Jake Hanson they trust more, and they end up sticking with him and hoping that Jamal Hill, at least to begin the season, is a practice squad guy.
Do you think that Arthur Millett makes this team?
That's a great question, yeah. Sean Pendergast.
he's flashed a little bit.
Yeah,
and he's.
I don't think so. And it's not because I don't like him, but again, there's a lot of guys that are not going to make this team that are going to get picked up elsewhere or that are 100% going to be on the Texans practice squad. But the overall trust level amongst cornerbacks right now, that's what I'm concerned about. There just aren't enough veterans that I feel really good about. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a guy out there that the Texans are going to trade for or would like to trade for, I think, that ends up squeezing some of these younger promising guys off.
Tremont Smith, D'Angelo Ross, Arthur Millett, Miles Bryant, Jalen Mills, I guess sort of Jalen Reed, although he's been hurt too in camp, sixth-round pick. Like, I almost feel like Jalen Reed, he's practiced so little, and he's a sixth-round pick that if they were to waive him, they would easily be able to bring him back on the practice squad right now.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I guess, you know, when we were talking earlier about how a lot of the guys you have in the secondary right now are guys that have been on the team before when we were kind of worried about the depth of the secondary.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the depth chart from September of 2022, from September 1st, 2022.
That's some Google. That's
Tremont Smith.
Some Google skills right there, man.
What's that?
That's some Google skills.
Our lads. Oh, but like Tremont Smith, your backup cornerback. MJ Stewart, your backup safety.
Yeah.
There are guys that those guys have stuck around because they like, you know, they like them for a certain reason. And I think they make the team probably, you know, for those same reasons. But you've got to be constantly looking to upgrade some of that.
D'Angelo Ross has been on this team since 2022. I looked it up on his Wikipedia page. I'm like, how long has he managed to stick around? And he has stuck around, not only been here since 2022, but managed to survive a coaching change. You know, to D'Amico Ryan, you know, D'Amico likes him. Obviously.
Yeah, that's the one thing that Nick has been really, really good at identifying cornerbacks in the draft. But it does just feel like there should be better depth. If you're that good at identifying the actual starters and what have you, and maybe this is just the hazards of always, like, hey, look, your backup secondary is never gonna feel as good about it as your starters. It's just flat out the way the cookie crumbles.
Well, and especially when your starters in this secondary are these guys. You know, like, your starters are elite in this secondary. All right, so a few names kind of kicking around right there. We'll see. It'll all hash itself out, as D'Amico said. It'll all work itself out over the next day or so. The two big stories from around preseason over the weekend nationally, it appeared. One, Micah Parsons at the Cowboys game on Friday. They were playing the Atlanta Falcons, and Micah Parsons was laying down. He was the only Cowboy that wasn't wearing his jersey. Like, even the guys, even the starters who weren't playing were wearing Cowboy gear. Micah Parsons was in regular, like, civilian sweats, laying down on a medical table while the game was going on. Almost looked like he was taking a nap over there. To which Brian Schottenheimer, the new head coach of the Cowboys, had to answer questions about that, saying, hey, I'm going to talk to Micah about this. But this all appears, Seth, to be woven into the current contract situation with Micah Parsons.
It's hard because Micah Parsons is just kind of a free spirit to begin with. There's a lot of things you could look at that Micah Parsons does or says where in the past, before there was any of this contract stuff, you might think, is he trying to send a message? And you realize, oh, no, it's just Micah Parsons being kind of goofy. I don't know.
This doesn't feel extreme to you?
Not wearing the jersey is the big one. That feels like that's like you're very clearly not like one of these things is not like the other.
That's big.
Like, it's very conspicuous.
That's bigger than laying down on a medical table? While a game is going on and everybody else is standing on the sideline watching the games.
Yeah, because he wasn't riveted by the Sean. Not everybody's watching the game on the sidelines during a preseason.
No.
Game.
I understand it. No, I get it. Yeah. Humor me here for a second. Like, not standing there and laying on the medical table is a little much. Would you admit that?
No, I feel like it's one of those things that gets noticed because people are specifically looking to see what Micah Parsons is doing on the sideline.
Yeah.
So if I had seen it and it was just some random older veteran or something, I would have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't, but you combine it with him not having the jersey on, then it's something different.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, I know everybody's not interested in the game.
It's like every now and then when they catch somebody taking a whiz on the sideline and they make a big deal out of it. I'm like, that happens. Well, it used to happen every single game. Now they got the medical tent.
Yeah.
So they're still doing it. They're just doing it inside the medical tent.
Yeah. Gotcha. The other thing was Shadur Mania lasting all of 2 weeks in Cleveland. Well, it's still lasting for a lot of people, Shadur Mania, but in terms of him being even reasonably close to a discussion of being the starting quarterback for the Browns, that ship has now sailed.
And it's reached the peak of idiocy when it comes to people's conspiracy theories, because there's certain... I saw somebody yesterday on a comment that got a lot of traction that one of the reasons that they're blackballing Shadur Sanders is because he's a Christian. And I'm like,
yeah, that's the first I've heard of that. I didn't see that.
Dude, when people bring, that's when you know it's a crossover hit, because those are people who aren't actual NFL fans that just somehow somebody heard it. They heard it from somebody that, like, oh, well, yeah, you know what they don't like about him is he's a Christian. This notion that there's like six Christians in the NFL, as opposed to, no, the reality of it is, it's like you're working in a Chick-fil-A when you're working in an NFL team. You can't walk 3 feet without stumbling over somebody's Bible or something. Yeah, it's very religious workplace.
I guess just to get people up to speed on what exactly is going on in Cleveland. So this is what happened this weekend: is that Joe Flacco started the game against the Rams. Was very, very good. Dylan Gabriel then came in and went like 11 for 19, and he looked solid. I think threw a touchdown pass. Like, Dylan Gabriel looked good. In came Shadur Sanders with the threes, and he was 3 for 6 for 14 yards and was sacked 5 times, including this 23-yard sack that you're about to hear right here.
Sanders being pressured, spins away again, keeping the play alive. The fans love it, but that's one of those plays where maybe he's got to roll out and throw it away, huh?
Maybe, you think? I mean, the line of scrimmage, the line of scrimmage was the 46-yard line. He got tackled at the 23. So the other thing we should point out is that with 2 minutes to go in the game, with the Browns trailing 17-16, Kevin Stefanski, instead of leaving Shadur in, chose to bring in Snoop Huntley, who, by the way, was cut this morning, the fifth quarterback on the team, to come in, and he actually engineered a game-winning drive. They kicked a field goal. They win the game. So the things that people were most upset with, the Shadur fans were most upset with, were one, Kevin Stefanski put Shador in with the threes, and he wasn't calling the plays that he was calling for Flacco.
He's not calling the same plays. Gabriel. He saved the good plays for Gabriel.
Yeah, right. That's number one. And number two was replacing Shador, not giving Shador a shot at redemption at the end of the game. He brought in Snoop Huntley, who's not even going to make this team.
Yep. The Snoop Huntley thing, I can see where people would raise an eyebrow at that. There is part of it that you do try to be a place that allows guys a chance to play in the preseason game so other teams can get film on guys. And it's more of an indicator to me that, yeah, they'd already made their decision about Dylan Gabriel, which people out of Cleveland have been saying for a couple of weeks now, that they like Dylan Gabriel more so than they like Shador Sanders mm-hmm. right now. It's not like Shador was going to have a chance to earn his spot on the depth chart or whatever. He's going to be on the team. So the Snoop Huntley stuff doesn't bother me one bit. I think, though, I think it's the thing that's bothering me is I don't have an issue at all with the way they're handling Shador Sanders, but I also don't like leaning into that one really bad scramble as somehow the evidence that obviously he sucks or something like that.
No, of course not.
There's plenty of young quarterbacks who do the same thing. It is part of his scouting report that he holds onto the ball. If you watched in college, he holds onto the ball too long. He tries to make something out of nothing. So it's something that he does need to continue to work on. But it's the sum total of everything the Browns have watched during training camp and the OTAs and everything else. And Dylan Gabriel has worked with the ones more. I mean, people bring up training camp stats and completion percentages and what have you. Yeah, part of that is that Dylan Gabriel has been going against the first team defense a lot more than Shador Sanders has. The biggest thing that you brought up that makes the most sense, Sean, about the conspiracy theories about Shador is exactly what would be the motivation for the NFL at large to have some kind of campaign against Shador Sanders? He's not that big a deal.
No.
Like, in terms of, like, there's nothing he does controversially that's different than so many other young players in the NFL. I don't understand I don't even get why there's conspiracy theories that the NFL wouldn't want Shador to get drafted high or to be playing or what have you, because there's nothing unique about him when it comes to things the people don't like his personality. I forgot about how so few guys with unlikable personalities.
He's the first unlikable guy to be drafted into the NFL ever.
So that it cuts it off at the knees. It doesn't make any rational sense. Now, if the Browns made the wrong decision, possibly, sure, I could go with that. But you're also, in trying to paint the Browns as the demons here, like, this is a team that was the only one out of 32 teams that drafted Shador.
Right.
Which was probably stupid, because as soon as they don't make Shador the starter, they become enemy number one in people's minds, where it doesn't make any sense at all. You're somehow more angry at the Browns than the 31 other teams that didn't draft Shador Sanders.
Well, and this is where I feel bad for Shador. And by the way, like, it is turned some otherwise intelligent people into saying some of the dumbest things. I saw a Twitter account yesterday. The Browns made a bunch of cuts yesterday. Yeah. And this person said, oh my God, look, they cut four of the offensive linemen that were playing with Shador, as if that was a morsel of the conspiracy theory. And I'm like, yeah, that's what teams do the 2 days before the deadline, is they cut third string offensive line. Sorry, he's third string. And I feel bad for Shador in all this, because you know what Shador hasn't been doing? He hasn't been fueling any of this. Shador has handled his business, by all accounts, and from everything I've seen with my own eyes, very, very well. What the Shadoraholics are doing right now is they are making it harder for Shador to stick somewhere else if the Browns decide to move on. I can tell you this right now. If the Browns wanted to keep four quarterbacks, with Shador being one of them, but they're worried about wasting a roster spot on keeping four quarterbacks, put Shador on waivers. Nobody will pick him up with the way all these lunatics are acting right now. Do the other 31 teams want this sort of drama in their building right now with Shador? I feel bad for Shador. The people who are out here pumping up this conspiracy theory stuff are doing Shador Sanders zero favors right now.
Right. And no, so much of it. I mean, there's people out there. Again, it's a crossover hit, so there's actual non-football fans weighing in now, too. But some actual football fans saying that it looked like the offensive linemen weren't trying as hard when they were blocking.
I mean, Shador. What?
The guys fighting to make the team, just trying to feed their own families.
Right.
And this isn't an exaggeration with those guys. They are literally trying to feed their families.
Yes.
They're not going to, like, they're not, a lot of those guys that get cut today are never going to get a job in the NFL again.
Correct.
So they're literally trying to feed their families. That, yeah, because they're somehow involved in this vast conspiracy to keep Shedeur Sanders down.
Yeah, it's wild, man. All right, let's do acknowledge me. Let's get to these. We got a bunch of acknowledgments we need to do. A whole bunch. We got some football. We got some baseball. Some local business. It's all good. Let's start with Nick Caley, Texans offensive coordinator. This just looks like a much better coached offense through the preseason. Preseason's done now. This looks like, so far, the first step, which is the implementation, the installation of the offense, and getting a bunch of new guys on the O-line. This thing looks like it's moving in the right direction. You know who loves him some Nick Caley? Rob Gronkowski. This was Rob Gronkowski. I think this was with Edelman on the podcast.
Yeah,
this was Gronk talking about Nick Caley.
Who's the offensive coordinator?
The offensive coordinator? Shout out to Nick Caley. He was my tight end coach for a couple years here in New England. And he FaceTime called me out of the blue a couple weeks ago, man. And Nick Caley brings the absolute juice to the table every single day on a daily basis. He loves the game of football. He's a smart coach, knows the offense inside and out, knows all the tricks and traits to being a great coach. So I'm excited about him. Actually, I'm more excited about Nick Caley being the offensive coordinator and seeing what he does with this offense with C.J. Stroud and the other guys. I got Nico Collins, who's one of my favorite receivers in the league. Big guy. I love my big guys. You know, I just relate to them big time. Big guys that can move and make big plays, and Nico Collins is one of them. So I'm looking out for Nick Caley big time, and I think he's going to strive and be excellent. I think that's the right fit for him as well to be a first-time offensive coordinator.
I just love Gronk's delivery.
Well, that's you know what, though? That was more of a – that was like polished TV Gronk.
Yeah.
You could tell. I think he was working from notes a little bit, but not in a bad way.
Right.
Just – it was almost like he was getting ready to do his Sunday hit on the pregame show.
And still not super polished, which I love.
You're right, but in a way that it's still endearing.
I love it. That's what I'm saying.
He let
yeah.
the emotion come through.
Yeah, no, I think
more
it's
so
great.
Than trying to – the first year he was on there, it felt like they had tried to put an orangutan in a suit or something, and it wasn't a good fit. Now I think he's found a good balance there.
Yep. And I love what he said about Nick Caley. I love that Caley's just popping open his phone and FaceTiming Rob Gronkowski for no reason a couple weeks ago.
There was another former Patriots player podcast a few months ago that had some really good words about it. Oh, it was Cole Popovich.
Yeah.
It was Rob Ninkovich?
It was Ninkovich. Yep, sure was. Yeah, yep.
The Caley so far, and I said earlier in the show, one of the things that's most encouraging for me is the fact that the running backs have been so good in pass protection.
Right.
We heard Damian Pierce earlier talk about how much Nick Caley and then Cole Popovich, the offensive line coach, works with the running backs, and it just sounds like a different environment there. That's something that I don't take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because it's the preseason.
Yep.
It's very, very clear that the running backs are much more capable, smarter, dialed in on pass protection this year. And that is 100% a reflection of coaching. So it's a really good sign.
Woody Marks, we acknowledge him for his first, albeit a preseason touchdown, but his first career touchdown.
Second down and four at the Detroit 9. Mertz under center, Marks in the backfield. Berrios motioning around. Here's the give to Woody, over left guard, across the 5. He's in! Touchdown, Houston! Woody Marks, power running into the end zone. Good blocking on the left side, and the Texans are back in front of Detroit.
I'm just saying.
That's going to be a hot key.
I am just saying.
Ben? Is it a hot key, Ben? Yeah, there we go.
We got Primal Andre on that one.
That's the only reason I'm acknowledging this right now. I wanted to play that play.
Couple notable things other than Woody Marks on that play. Austin Deculus buried his guy.
Yep.
So good job, Austin Deculus, on that play. But also Braxton Berrios had a couple of blocks. He gave a shove to a defensive lineman and then worked up to the second level. But the only thing I could think of was If that were Tank Dell, people would be irate right now. Because he's a tiny wide receiver down in there on goal line blocking in the
corner. Nobody gave a crap about Berrios.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. It's that's where the one thing that I would stick up with with Bobby Slowick was, yeah, I mean, he's a football player. Like, you can't just if you want him on the field, you can't. You're gonna have to use him at times. You can't just let the defense know that. Nope. Whenever Tank Dell or Braxton Berrios or anybody tiny is out there, they're just gonna be aligned wide. Yeah. Just don't even worry about him.
All right. Let's keep it moving and acknowledge me, Brian Abreu. He's done a really nice job. He's done a really nice job as the closer of this team since Josh Hader went out with a shoulder injury. In fact, he came in those two slugfests. Man, Brian Abreu should have never had to pitch in either of those games. The Astros scored 10 runs and 9 runs, and they've got Abreu coming in games against the Orioles to have to close him out. But back-to-back night, Seth, he had a multi-inning save on Friday, had to get 4 outs. And then he came in on Saturday and saved that 9-8 game. A game they were up 5-0 in the first inning, and snap your fingers, and Christian Javier's given the whole thing back by like the third inning of that game. But Brian Abreu deserves acknowledgement. He has been outstanding since becoming the closer for this baseball team.
There's no margin for error here on this either. It's the Astros currently have a 2-game lead in the division, and
I don't know how they're doing it, man.
Are they running on fumes? It doesn't feel like they're running on fumes. It feels like they're running on the wrong octane gasoline.
The pitching, the bullpen is absolutely running on fumes. They're bringing in different guys every day that I've never heard of before.
Those aren't fumes, though. That's bad gasoline.
Okay,
you don't even have the right guys out there or anything. You're in a high performance vehicle running on 87 octane. I include in that the starting pitching.
Yeah,
because those guys they're not themselves, or they're not the best version of themselves.
When I think of running on fumes, I'm thinking of just like being nearly on empty, and the bullpen's just taxed.
Yeah.
You know, forget about the names. Like, they're just getting overused and overworked. So
it's multiple things.
Yeah.
They're running on the fumes of a lower octane gasoline.
No doubt about
that's
that.
That's a problem.
Zero
that's
doubt.
That's a
problem.
You've got guys that shouldn't.
That's two problems.
Guys you don't want to lean on, and those guys are tired.
Right, right. Yordan Alvarez.
It's like me running a mile. Yeah. You're like, hey, who are you going to have run the mile for the Sports Radio 610
Sethers?
Intramurals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth
Meister.
It's going to
be Seth.
Yep.
Yeah. It's going to be Seth. But no, wait, there's more.
Okay.
He's hungover.
I'm going through our roster. You might not be the worst choice, actually.
Actually, yeah.
I mean, what are we saying?
Speak very highly of our crew.
We will never win a team decathlon, for sure. Yordan Alvarez, quick acknowledgement here. 2-for-4 last night. 2-run double. For Corpus, 7-for-15, 4 doubles at double-A ball. Get this man back to Houston now. However you get him here, Uber, train, private jet, get him back to Houston. And that's the word on the street is he's back in the lineup for this. As long as he came out of last night feeling okay, he's back in the lineup for this Colorado series. So that's good. Thumbs up.
Everybody, if you see him driving back, just go ahead and give him a nice wave.
There you go.
Yeah. Give him the Yordan wave.
That's right.
Which is like a two-handed something like
just like
take
Seth,
your hands off the wheel briefly.
Doing it on the YouTube for you guys right there. Ben DiNucci, journeyman quarterback and master self-deprecator. He got let go by the Atlanta Falcons. I like this. Ben DiNucci was on the Cowboys last year. This is just funny to me on Twitter. And this is, if you're a journeyman, this is how you should treat it, man. All those trips to the airport, all those flights to go try out and work out for teams. When you get cut by the Atlanta Falcons in training camp, this is what you do. You post a picture of your airport bar beer and you tweet, "Not many beers better than the airport. I just got cut from the NFL for the 7th time beer." Trust me, you wouldn't understand.
Very few humans would understand that.
I want him on this team. I thought that'd be funny, man. You know, I'm a big airport bar guy, Seth. I'm a big airport bar guy.
Good move by him not like tweeting out the 7th and 8th and 9th beer too. If he... You know, that's what happens sometimes with these NFL cuts. They'll cut you and they'll get you to the airport right away, but it's the flight. They're sending you home on Southwest.
Yep.
And maybe AirTran back in the day or whatever. So you end up having some time at the airport.
Yeah.
So you got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because you got to be really careful because you might end up having a workout with another team the next day.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, man. Keep it between the lines, Ben DiNucci. Let's go. The Aggies. I'm acknowledging them for nothing having to do with football. I'm acknowledging the Aggies because they're getting Bucky's products at three locations on campus this fall. The first place outside of the actual Bucky's locations to carry Bucky's products like the Beaver Nuggets, and I would imagine there'll be some of the, you know, the big brick Rice Krispie treats with the Fruity Pebbles in them. You know, some of the stuff, maybe even some of the sandwiches they have there. Who knows? But 45 different Bucky's products are going to be sold on campus at three locations for the Aggies. Good for the Aggies.
Smart way for the Aggies to start branching into that side of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was licensing, bro.
That's
or
right.
I guess they're producing them and then just selling them elsewhere.
Yeah, man. Well, yeah. Bucky's are Aggie founded, but I think the founder of Bucky's is an Aggie. So that would stand to reason that they get the first dibs on campus of those delicious Bucky's products.
Are you nervous that Bucky's might be starting to stray too far outside their core business?
Outside of what they, yeah. Are they going to take their eye off the ball a little bit?
Yeah.
Should they stay? Yeah,
yeah,
maybe. Maybe a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't we have Payne and Pendergast products, you know, licensed elsewhere? Why can't we be licensing billionaires, Sean?
Ben?
Like so many of these other celebrities.
Big book of business ideas, Ben. Become licensing millionaires.
Billionaires.
Right. Billionaires. Yeah, sorry.
Jeez.
Seth wants to run before he walks. Yeah. Billionaires. All right. Funplex closes after 40 years over there on the southwest side of town. Brandon Scott tweeted that he could do a documentary, Seth, on the times he spent at the Funplex through the 40 years. Might need the texters to weigh in on that. And we're only on here till 8 o'clock. But if you've got any Funplex memories, text in. They called it an amusement park in the article about this.
They called it an amusement park, and in the title they call it a theme park, mm-hmm. which I've got an issue with the Houston Chronicle and saying it's either one of those things. It's I don't know what you call it, but it's one of these really cool. It's like a it was like one of the original Dave and Buster type yeah. places, but even with more. It offers roller skating and everything else like yeah. that. But it's all indoors. I don't think you're an amusement park. Or a theme park.
No.
Unless you've got roller coasters and whatnot.
Roller coasters, carousels, I would say, are a big yeah. part of amusement parks for the kids out there. Yeah.
So, but whatever it is, indoor entertainment complex.
Apparently yeah. it was a big part of Houston's fabric these last 40 years, and to that we memorialize Funplex. All right, last one.
I'll tell you what, with yeah. places like that, I know from personal experience with family members who have run kind of roller skating rinks and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, you got to be – the biggest pain in the ass is keeping the just keeping the bad eggs out.
Keeping
just
the drug dealers out.
You know, like the kid that – you know, the 27-year-old disguised as a 16-year-old that wants to distribute a little bit of something to the kids.
Yeah.
Get them hooked. The pusher man.
Yeah. Pusher man. It's true.
It's hard to keep a place going that long. You got to be vigilant, man.
Got to.
Yeah.
All right. Jaden Rodriguez. Okay. His dad, Nick, is a P1 listener, and he DM'd me, and he said, hey, he wanted an antibodies for Jaden Rodriguez. I said, no. We're gonna acknowledge him. Freshman year, college baseball career. He's a pitcher at Cedar Valley College. It starts this fall for him. Went to Summer Creek High School. So we acknowledge Jaden Rodriguez. Young man, best of luck on the beginning of your journey. We thank your dad, Nick, for being a P1 listener. I love this, though, Seth. They live in the same neighborhood, this family does, as Tyler Milner and Sean Bajani. So that's,
oh.
I mean, that's 2/12 of our, you know, producer / on-air lineup here.
That's that, and one of them is the guy that we would choose to run the mile for us in the intramurals, and Sean Bajani.
Definitely Bajani, yeah. T-Mill looks like he could. Like, he's not heavy or anything
he
like
does,
that.
But he also has the look of the guy that's going to stop halfway through for a cigarette break or something,
yes.
you know? He doesn't smoke, but it wouldn't surprise me.
He looks like
me.
He would. All right,
yeah.
So here's the question I have. And again, hey, Jaden, congratulations. We're acknowledging you for sure. Best of luck. What a great time to be alive, man. Freshman year, headed off to college to play ball. Who would you rather have as your neighbor, Tyler Milner or Sean Bajani?
This is no offense to Tyler here, but Sean Bajani, because of the old saying, good fences make good neighbors. And
literally.
Sean Bajani literally builds fences.
He does.
So I would rather have him. I would want Sean as a neighbor because he would build a brand new fence, which would mean that I don't have to.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
He'd have a beautiful fence on his side of the lawn, and I'd be like, okay, cool. My work is done on that side of the
lawn. It's tough for me. It's the same thing I thought of right out of the chute. Not so much that I need my fence repaired or anything, but like, boy, if I ever decided to actually fix something on my own, he would have all the tools in his garage that I could borrow. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to buy them. Now, my guess is that Tyler Milner probably throws great parties as a neighbor, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And if he has a swimming pool in his backyard, which I'm not sure he does, then it would be Milner. Then the problem is I would have a swimming pool, and I would be afraid that of the two of them, Tyler would definitely be the one that I would find in my pool when I got home from work or something like that. I had a neighbor like that in my first house in Tomball. We put a pool in the backyard, and for some reason our neighbors thought that it was okay for them, like while we were doing something on a Sunday morning, to just waltz into our backyard and use our pool. Yes.
They just started using your pool?
Not for long, but yes.
What the hell?
Yeah, man.
The adults or just the kids?
Yes.
The adults just waltzed over like it was a community
pool.
Brought
their family over there. We came home one morning, me and my ex-wife, and they were in our pool.
And what did they say when you walked out? Did they?
How you doing? Yeah. So I let them have their day.
What the hell?
I didn't want to make a scene in front of the kids. So I let them finish up their swimming, gave some glares that kind of gave the impression, and then later in the day I walked over and said, look, I just want to draw lines right here. That's not going to happen again. Like, it's not.
Okay, this is one of the weirdest things I've ever heard somebody do.
100% like, true. I'm not making it up.
What did they end up being an issue in other areas of being a neighbor? Or?
No, they were actually decent. He was one of these Bajani have a bunch of tools in his garage guys.
Yeah.
So he did have a use for me, but not enough to where I'm giving him membership to the pool I just put in my backyard.
He must have, you know what? Maybe he grew up in a neighborhood where it was kind of like one of those older, back when people really actually knew their neighbors and everything, and the neighborhood kids would all just kind of use each other's pools and stuff.
Yes, yeah. Not a bad guy. But that's not happening. Yeah.
But even then, if you don't know the people, to just start,
Asking to borrow something from somebody is different than literally walking onto their property and borrowing their swimming pool.
That's like, can I have a cup of sugar? And while I'm at it, do you mind if I urinate in your pool?
And they had little kids too, so they were probably peeing in the damn pool now that I think about it.
Wow.
I'm retroactively angry from 30 years
ago. Fascinated by this guy. I want to interview him. Let's get him on.
You love doing this. When I bring up some janky person from my past, let's get him on the show.
Find out what became of them.
He may not even remember. It was 30 years ago. But it's a true story. Football Talk on Sports Radio 610, presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus. All season long, visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Tuesday Pettycast Preview. We got a couple of them here. Yeah, that's coming up next. Stay there.